This program is proudly brought to you by Alan Gray, building long-term wealth for our clients since 1973.
And welcome, welcome, welcome. Good evening, good evening, good evening, dear listeners. Welcoming you to another Wednesday edition here of the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia. And once again, welcoming you to what we always bring, what we've brought to you for the past 8-9 weeks so far, and ultimately still continuing on as we provide you with the insightful discussions. Once again, we've got Etienne in studio from Alan Gray Namibia, and just welcoming Etienne again. Etienne, good evening, and thank you for taking the time. And it's ultimately, you know, we have these discussions, and it's always good, you know, we always learn something new. But thank you once again for taking the time to talk to us.
Fantastic to be here. Thank you, Dwight.
Now, if dear listeners, just to let you know before we start off with the discussions, you can listen to us on the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on any of the platforms, as well as through the Eagle FM website, or which is technically streaming the conventional radio set that you would have ultimately, as you know, you would always listen to radio. And there's always the opportunity of engagement and participation, where you can drop us a text message on the SMS line at 1040, or you can call through at 08832884 01. Obviously, in terms of how time allows or permits the engagements and the discussions. But if you would like to know what this evening's discussion is going to be, you can also hop over to our social media where we've got the poster up highlighting the particular talking point for this evening. This obviously is a discussion, Etienne, that we've highlighted in a few editions a little bit earlier, but we have to talk about it again, which is the notion of not keeping all eggs in a basket. The poster for this evening obviously also includes a little bit of some external exposures, sometimes known as by the term of offshore. But obviously, we have to start off with what eggs can we find in Namibia. I'm not talking about the physical eggs that we have to buy. Yeah,
Dwight. No, thank you. I mean, the principle, one of the cornerstones of investing or saving, is not to invest in any one single type of asset. As you might remember from earlier episodes, the main asset classes, as we call them, the main types of assets that one can invest in are cash, bonds, equities, or shares, commodities, and then listed property or property. So that is what we mean, you know, with those are the different eggs, if you would. As I said, it's fundamental for any investor to diversify among, you know, these different types of assets. Yeah. But one can go one step further, and you can say, okay, within, say, shares, there are different segments of shares. You have financial shares, which are typically the banks, or you could also have property shares. Whatever the case might be, you could also diversify by not being in a single type of share. Then you can go even one step further and say, well, you shouldn't only have shares from Namibia or shares from South Africa. You should also have shares from the rest of the world. You can continue on that trend of diversification. But the good news is, you know, all of those different types of assets are actually available in Namibia in many ways and forms. And I mean, we'll allude to it later, you know, again, basically, you know, central to all the discussions were unit trusts as an investment vehicle, which could offer you all of this in one single solution. But we'll touch on that. But yeah, the eggs, think in terms of different types of assets: cash, bonds, property, shares, and commodities.
The next particular question, which you already alluded to, was obviously how would we define the eggs, which would be one of the unit trust, like the unit trust discussion we had earlier in the series. If we look at the unit trust as, can we consider unit trust? Let me just ask that question. Can we consider unit trust as the basket or as the egg in our discussion, Etienne?
Yeah, good question. You can actually, as an investor, invest in multiple unit trusts, which I guess would then almost to an extent make the unit trusts the eggs.
Yeah.
But in the very first episode, when I described a unit trust was I said the unit trust was actually the basket.
Yep.
But think about it a bit more like a shopping basket where companies like ourselves would go and find sort of the best quality eggs out there to put in this basket. It, which, you know, kind of goes against the grain now of not putting all your eggs in one
exactly,
basket.
Yeah.
So I can absolutely understand the confusion. But,
yeah.
But you know, a unit trust in essence is a single portfolio that could contain multiple assets.
Mm.
But for you to lose all your eggs, it means that everything that we've put into that basket has to go rotten.
Mm.
So say, for instance, we have in there shares from FNB Namibia, Namibia Breweries, you know, just as by way of local examples.
Mm.
For you to lose all your money in a unit trust would also mean that FNB must go bankrupt and Namibia Breweries must go bankrupt. Mm. And then one of the eggs in that Namibian unit trust basket as well, you know, for instance, cash or bonds, you know, the government of Namibia must go bankrupt for you to go to zero on the bond part, you know, if the bond egg goes rotten. So, I get the confusion. I think a unit trust just, you know, gives you that very, you know, flexible solution in without having to go and decide which share should I buy, you know, and which bank would give me the best interest rates or, you know, what government bond, you know, the 10-year one or the 20-year one or you know, longer is going to give me the best yields. Unit trust managers or the asset managers that build these unit trusts and put them together actually takes that thinking out of the equation for the end investor and say, but we will do this on your behalf.
Mm.
And you do get so many different unit trusts, Dwight, and it becomes important, therefore, as I've mentioned before, you know, to clearly define your goal.
Yeah.
But I think in general, for most investors, you know, would end up in one way or another in a multi, you know, especially those ones, sorry, I should caveat it by saying, you know, those saving for retirement will find themselves ultimately in what we call a multi-asset unit trust or balanced fund, you know, is another, it could be another term for that. But yeah, and there's a good example, you know, just that description would already indicate that there are different eggs, you know, in this single basket solution. But don't worry, if the basket drops, you know, your eggs, some of them will almost
time.
Them should be safe.
When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. Go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money, and then money gives you more time for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
And just returning back from the ad break, dear listeners, and in terms of where we left off, Etienne was still giving us the lowdown in terms of how to look at the egg and the basket discussion. I actually wanted to throw in another spanner into the egg and basket waiting. Etienne, if we look at what Ellen Gray offers in terms of the unit trusts, just to jog our memory, it so far they're just two, right? In terms of the current situation. Not like people can go like, oh, I want to, you know, have my own tailor-made specific unit trust. It's just the two that we know so far. If we even look at it, then can we consider the two of them as baskets or as eggs in our particular analogy? I know it will confuse and throw people off, but they can interchangeably use whichever term they want to use.
No, absolutely. Dwight, so it is, we have two unit trust funds that are registered in Namibia, each with their own investment objective. So they would serve different purposes for people with different investment goals.
Mm.
I think in this case, I'm comfortable to say, think of these as the baskets, right? So, I mean, if you think about our, I'll call it our flagship fund. We don't really have flagship funds, but
yeah.
I'll call it our flagship fund. It's perhaps the most well-known one in Namibia.
Mm.
Towards the end of this year, this fund would actually turn 25 years old, meaning it's been in existence for that long. Within this Alan Gray Namibia Balanced Fund, you would find investments from Namibia that will include Namibian shares, Namibian government bonds, Namibian property, listed property. And then you would also find a portion of South African assets in there.
Mm.
There would be a bit of assets from the rest of the African continent outside of Namibia and South Africa. And then there's a proper chunk of offshore investments.
Mm.
Now, I've mentioned before, you know, people might think, why offshore? As I've said before, Namibia and South Africa combined makes up 0.6% of what you can invest in the entire world.
Yeah.
That's less than 1% of what one can invest as an ordinary investor, you know, that is situated in Namibia and South Africa. So why would you want to confine yourself?
Mm.
And that's what I said earlier. Part of diversification is by being invested not only in Namibia, not only in South Africa, but also open yourself up to the investment opportunities that are there in the rest of the world, which is, of course, our job to find on your behalf.
Yeah.
So in terms of the two Alan Gray Unit Trust funds that are available to individual investors in Namibia, you can think of them as the basket, as the portfolio, and we will then carefully handpick the best sort of quality eggs to put in there.
Did you hear that, guys? Ultimately, obviously, you can consider Etienne to be the farmer, well, you can't be the chicken because the chicken obviously has to lead to some, but yeah, let's rather deem it as like the retailer because, you know, the eggs would be, the baskets would be available. Etienne, if we look at the particular, well, the second question, because I actually now expanded our first question a lot. If we had to look at the notions or the aspects of offshore exposure, because you just highlighted Namibia and South Africa together, like 0.6%. Less than 1%. What would people have to consider in this discussion? How broad would it have to be? Would it be something like all the way into Japan? Like, you remember when you sort of like bought me over with the idea of Nintendo, and I was like, wow, you could actually buy into a tech company? Or would it be, you know, things that resemble specifically like what you would find in Namibia and in South Africa, established particular approaches or established offerings that would be available in that regard?
Offshore, Dwight, I think is quite important, mainly for that diversification reason.
Mm.
But it's also an opportunity set.
Mm.
Just latching on to Namibia and South Africa representing less than 1% of what is available out there. You said that I'm the farmer. I must just go one step back. I'm not the farmer. I'm the person that can explain why my colleagues who are the farmers have chosen certain eggs to put in the basket.
Almost like the distributor.
Well, maybe. And my colleagues in the investment team, the analysts, they would go and look for the best quality eggs out there, the best quality companies that are available.
Mm.
You've mentioned Nintendo. Part of the reason why that is in the portfolio is because there was one or more of our analysts that would have done a very in-depth analysis on this company, you know, and this analysis can take months to complete, and then our the investment committee would decide whether or not it is included in the basket. Just back on offshore, it is, if you think about it, the United States, the stock market, the share market in the United States, states roughly represents 65% of all the stock markets in the world.
Yeah.
Right. So already there, the shares that are listed, it is enormous. And if you want to, and if you want to take it even further, you know, the top seven shares, you know, what are often called the Magnificent Seven, which includes the likes of Apple and Microsoft, you know, it constitutes a big chunk of that 65% again. Now, I've said to you before, we are very happy to, I mean, I'm noting that the computer in front of you, that is an Apple computer. You know,
this is a Samsung phone.
Samsung phone, outside there's a Toyota parked, or a Volkswagen. You can actually invest in all those shares. You can either do it yourself, go to a stockbroker and say, please buy me, you know, shares from across the world, and I want A, B, and C. Or if you do not have the time to do your own research, which I would say most of us don't have, unless you're an investment professional, you could access these, you know, not the, exactly the ones that I've mentioned, but a lot of the well-known shares you can access through investing in a unit trust, right? So we can, in Namibia, both our unit trust funds here that I've mentioned, the Namibia Balanced, the Namibia Stable Funds, comply with Regulation 13 of the Pension Funds Act, meaning that people that are saving in a pension fund or in a retirement annuity could also have these funds as part of it. It is legislated, the limits, how we can invest in these funds. You know, the most well-known one is no more than 75% of the funds are allowed to be invested in shares. A minimum of 45%, minimum of 45% must be invested in Namibia. And so, you know, that leaves us with some room to find opportunities in South Africa, Africa, and the rest of the world. So I think it is a brilliant way to diversify, you know, not only to diversify, you know, to take it even one step further. You can take a share like AB, Anheuser Busch InBev. AB InBev, the an enormous, a gigantic beer brewer.
Number two, I think.
I think they're number one, actually.
They're number one,
But I might have to confirm that colleagues.
Because of what happened now last year, I think they're number two, number one shared, these two brewers.
And, you know, if you think of the number of countries, they sell their beers in over 100 countries, in their beers and beverages in over 100 countries in the world. What does that mean? It means that the revenue that they generate by the sales are in different currencies, whether that being Australia dollar, you know, US dollar,
or euro,
euros, or yen. It doesn't matter, you know. So now you are protected in a way, in, you know, also against these currency movements. You know, so, you know, buying a, you know, selling a beer in Mexico, you will have this Mexican peso. And whether it is you're drinking a beer in Holland, you know, and they sell it there and it's euros, think about it. So it's such a well-diversified company in itself. So if the rand or the Namibia dollar weakens against major currencies, you know, you're actually in one way or another protected by having this share in your basket. Right. So no. So I guess one can speak an entire evening on the benefits of investing offshore. And sure, I think you can also be overexposed to that. Let's not forget that the Namibian stock market and the South African stock market, you know, if you look over very, very long periods, you know, if you look at sort of 20, 30, and in the case of the South African one, you know, multiple decades, they've done actually extremely well when compared to stock markets in the rest of the world. So I think, you know, depending on what your investment goal is, just a reminder, we cannot give financial advice. So, you know, you must determine what is your goal, what your goals are. You know, this could be a lovely solution to get that exposure globally. And yeah.
If we look at the plan, and I know we just have 4 minutes before the next ad break, but if we look at, you know, the offshore exposure component, because one of our earlier discussions was obviously about how you look at your particular need, either invest for whatever rainy day or situation, or it's your savings, or it's retirement, or it's, you know, if you just wish to expand a little bit or diversify a little bit, how does this play in Etienne? Like, for example, the Namibia, looking at trying to invest in Namibia or balancing out Namibia, South Africa, offshore or internationally, in terms of having like a mixture of, let's say it's like a mixed dozen of eggs, but they're all Namibian, South African and offshore based. Some people would think, you know, let me rather go full offshore or full South Africa or full Namibia. What would be the problem with the two particular mindsets, if there is a problem for you to identify? Or is it like, look, balance them out as possible so that they all strengthen in the basket itself?
So if you are looking at unit trust in isolation, that would be one thing. But say that you sit and analyze yourself and consider what assets you have. For the majority of us living in Namibia, you know, our home that we live in would probably constitute our largest asset, right? Yeah. So, and if you look at the value of that asset and compare that to, you know, your overall assets, I think you would find that it constitutes quite a large portion of your overall worth. Now, I think, again, depending on what your investment goals are, the way that I would look at it is say, well, okay, the home that I live in, you know, that's Namibian. And maybe, you know, most of my other things, that's Namibian. So if I look at my personal basket of what I have, quite a bit is in Namibia. So, you know, to then apply one of the fundamentals of investing, which is, you know, diversifying, should I be investing even more in Namibia? Now, you could be, you know, because there's almost a bit of euphoria in Namibia at the moment about prospects from green hydrogen, oil, and all the sort of all the industries that sits on the periphery that would also benefit from you know, expansion into these two sectors. So some people might feel very strong and say, you know what, I know that I should diversify, but I will diversify by buying another property. I have one in Windhoek. I will also now buy one in Walvis Bay. Now I've spread my risk that way. And yes, it is a way of diversification. But I think, you know, you know, that almost emphasizes the point of sitting down and deciding what your goals are. But yes, no, I mean, Dwight, there's no right and wrong. You know, as I said, for myself and my wife, we, you know, our Namibian assets as a percentage of what we have, you know, is quite high. So therefore, I would, you know, look at unit trusts that are out there that have a higher exposure to offshore, you know, just to balance out what I have, what I have in Namibia. And that's why I say it depends from person to person.
Just before we continue with the show, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short break and come back right after that, heading into the second half of this evening's discussion.
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster. Or you could stop scrolling on the internet. Just think of all the hours you'll save. Now what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. It can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do. Even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
And coming back, dear listeners, from the short ad break right there. And as you have, if you've listened during the first half, you're obviously on the business and economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia. If for some reason, which I cannot control, you switched on your radio set only now, welcome and good evening. And you are on the business and economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia. Primarily, we have had a look at the notion of baskets and eggs. Well, you can obviously listen from the start of the discussion when it's later on the podcast. Just where we left off, we're actually now moving into like a multi-asset understanding. I don't want to say multi-egg understanding. I should stop using the egg reference. But we obviously now know that Alan Gray provides the two particular unit trusts. Are they both multi-asset portfolios? And ultimately, you know, how would they be classified in that scenario? Or do they look similar in the offerings that they have?
Yeah, no, I mean, good question again, Dwight. I think it's very important to understand. So the term multi-asset unit trust refers to the fact that that unit trust would invest in more than one type of asset. And in the case of the two that we have available at Alan Gray Namibia, you would typically find all of the major types of assets, as I said in the beginning, the cash, bonds, property, commodity, and shares, you would find in there. So that is what is referred to in the industry as multi-asset funds. One unit trust that holds all, that invests in all these different types of assets. Now, the two that we have here, that we have available here locally, is all about, or the sort of the major difference is about the amount of shares that one can invest in. So we have our own internal sort of mandates and investment limits. Our stable fund can invest between 0 and 40% in shares, whereas the balanced fund would typically have somewhere between 40 and 75% in shares. That's sort of the major difference. And the reason for that is, if you look historically, shares as an asset class, as a type of asset, have given you the best returns over the longer period. So if you look in 10-year cycles, shares were, you know, sort of the most often the winner, you know, compared to cash and bonds and so on. What we would then do is to say, right, for the typical investor saving for the longer term, the balanced fund is arguably the more appropriate one because it holds more shares, meaning that the expectation is that that unit trust would give you higher returns measured over the longer term. But we also acknowledge that not everybody has the same appetite for volatility or for risk. And for that reason, there's also the Alan Gray Namibia Stable Fund. So for people with a shorter investment horizon that is not comfortable with market volatility, because remember, the more shares you have in your basket, the more ups and downs you will see. The value of your investment would change more regularly. With the stable fund, there's a lot more cash and bonds that does not fluctuate as much as shares. You know, so all depending, you know, when you have that discussion with your financial advisor,
which everyone should have.
Well, it's definitely that's the only advice I can give is that to say, you know, get the help of a financial advisor. You know, you would typically find people that are also more, older, you know, that are retired. You would typically find them in more conservative type funds like the stable fund, because you know, if something you know happens and there's a big fall in the value of the investment, you know, the stable fund would provide a lot more protection. You know, this would typically happen if there are big market events, you know. So you know, depending on what happens in America with the presidential election,
which is actually happening at the same time we're having ours.
That is correct, indeed. So that could be a very interesting time on the financial markets. One could see a bit of volatility there, depending on the outcome. But Dwight, yes, I mean that sort of the major differences are the you know, the amount of shares that we can have. But it gets a bit more complicated than that as well. It's not investing in unit trust, and I think this is something that everybody must understand, is not risk-free. But the definition of risk can also differ.
Yeah.
Right? So for us at Allan Gray, the way we think about risk is the risk of losing all your money. So again, if you think what we invest in our funds, in our unit trust, we invest in government bonds, we invest cash with banks, we buy shares. Now, for you to lose all your money, all those things, including the government, including the banks,
including the companies that issue the shares.
Correct.
Yeah.
Must go bankrupt. That's the only way that you can go to zero, right? So chances are not impossible, because I guess nothing in the world's impossible, but chances are if you diversify well enough within that portfolio, say you only had in your unit rights, you bought one bank, say Bank ABC, and you only bought one bond, and you only bought one type of commodity, and all of that crashes for some reason, then you would feel that you would have a severe impact on the value of your investment. But we buy different banks, we invest the cash with different banks, we buy different shares across the world. So if you think about it, you almost protect yourself for and make provision for different scenarios as well within a portfolio. So that's why I say it's not that simple. We think a lot about risk. We think a lot about protecting our investors' money against the eroding effect of inflation. So first and foremost, we would want to protect your capital.
Yeah.
Then we would want to give you returns over and above inflation. And I think everything over that, is sort of a bonus.
It's always a positive.
Absolutely.
Always a positive. Now, just to highlight, dear listeners, obviously, depending on how the flow of this evening's episode runs, there might be a short window. I say might because we've never been proven, we've never actually run out of discussion here on the Wednesday evenings of the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Allan Gray Namibia. But the opportunity is still there. If you just drop us a text message and you see, okay, let Dwight rather read out the question, you can still do so on 1040. Or if I give the heads up in terms of, one or two particular calls coming through, it is at 083-288-401. However, we still have a few particular subject matter to talk about. Etienne, now, the next particular question is one that I had to scratch a lot about. It's one where you look at every year since 2020, but let's take 2020 out of it. We all know what happened there. The aspects, like, for example, like you highlighted, the risk is not impossible, but it's also, it's very seldomly that you see something severe like what happened in 2020. If we look at each year brings about its own particular promises and happenings and sometimes also its question marks in life. Like, no one knew that Ukraine would start in 2022. But we now find ourselves in 2024. Namibia and the US have their elections. How would people specifically look at the external uncertainty, which is also the noise that I keep referencing, and they look at their particular goal in terms of what they want to save, what they want to retire on, or what they want to invest in? How do people have to, once again, not to say that you are going to give them financial advice, but just looking at the noise and the developments in the external world and how they need to look at what they wish to implement as their own desired investment goals in that scenario?
Yeah, it's a multifaceted question, Dwight. I think unless there's a major life event like a marriage or the birth of a child or a death, one's investment sort of goals should remain the same. You have to look forward. I know I have to retire one day. I know I have to provide for my child's education. I know I have to provide for medical emergencies. That kind of thing. So that would stay fixed. Regardless of what is going on in the world. Now, so you have your goals set. Now, in terms of uncertainty, I mean, we live in exceptionally uncertain times. I think the one bit of comfort that I always find is that there's not a single year that goes by where there isn't some imminent crisis,
yeah,
right? And we've been challenged with many crises since you know the earliest day of civilization. So, I don't think one can look in isolation and say 2024 is going to bring about this, mm-hmm, and 2025 is going to bring about that. Mm-hmm. There's a lovely book by author Morgan Housel called The Psychology of Money. Mm-hmm. And in this book, he says, you know, there's a chance of something happening, you know, almost, you know, every year. There's a chance of a war or a recession or, you know, some sort of a crisis. Mm-hmm. But the probability, you know, that you can attach to each of them, say there's a 2% chance that there would be a war between America and some other country, and a 3% chance of a recession in Europe. So, you know, individually, if you look at each one of those individually, the chances are slim.
Yeah.
But if you look at all the different things that could happen, then you might say, okay, but somewhere something's going to happen, yeah, and that is. Most, you know, often true. But to lie awake, and I can't remember in which episode we spoke about it, you know,
yeah,
one should focus on the things that matter,
yeah,
and B, the things that you can control, you know, if you can find the sweet spot between those two. So I don't think I would necessarily go and, you know, base my financial planning on what 2025 could potentially bring, because yeah, unless you have a crystal ball, you know, yeah, it's very hard.
Some sort of, or you actually yeah, Thanos with the, what do they call that glove? The infinity glove. You know, you can change fortunes.
I think that would be the biggest bidding war out there between asset management companies in the world, you know, if there was such a thing.
Yeah.
Look, there are, of course, indications. There are, of course, trends. Mm. At Allan Gray, we follow an investment style to say before we invest in a company, before we buy a share on behalf of our clients to put into the unit trust, we would first assess whether we think this company would be making money, would be successful over the next 5 years or longer.
Yeah.
So we always look way in advance, way into the future, and see, you know, are we comfortable that this is not a one-hit wonder that's going to make money next week or you know, in the next few months, but is it something that can actually, is a sustainable business with good management, good cash flow, you know, that produces or provides a service that people actually need and will be needing for the next few years to come. That's how we think about it, very long term. I think it's dangerous to say, look, there are things, of course, you know, that if there are wars waging between big countries, you know, somebody's got to manufacture those arms and ammunition and fighter jets and whatever. So those companies are then likely to see, you know, big benefits. And yeah, some of those companies are listed on stock exchanges,
yeah,
and the prices have surged. With the supply chain crisis, you know, over the COVID period, there was a huge shortage of microchips.
Yeah.
Now, microchips don't only go into cell phones and computers, they go into cars as well. You know,
yeah,
cars are driving computers these days. And, you know, there was a big delay in car companies in delivering.
I remember with Ford, because Ford South Africa used to say on their website, you can't order or expect to see this new updated version of their stable,
yeah,
because of the said, and they kept referencing the supply chip.
Yeah.
But even then, if we look at like the supply shortage that was also created from the COVID impact, was the container supply companies, the shipping companies as well, because all of them would be listed somewhere, obviously. But even in that scenario, just to reference Etienne, these past 2 days, meaning yesterday and the day before, I had to hear from African Union MSME people highlighting the aspect of a startup becoming a unicorn. And I just wanted to ask, you know, sort of like a, as an extra question, how would we factor in unicorns in a discussion for like, you know, in that discussion of investment from a Namibian perspective? Do they actually exist on the African continent?
I think probably the well, I won't say the most successful, but you know, it's definitely one of the most successful stories from the African continent is a share called Naspers, you know, which
yes, the guys that own MultiChoice.
MultiChoice, yes. But you know, MultiChoice is maybe a drop in the in the ocean for what, if you look at what they own. So I mean, there was a good example of a company that started out as a you know, as a publishing company almost. You know, they for, you know, if you know the U magazine or Huisgenoot for Afrikaans listeners, and the most of the Afrikaans daily newspapers or weekly newspapers in South Africa, that's how they started out. And later on, it was DSTV, MultiChoice, and a whole range of sort of other sort of media companies or media businesses that they owned. And then they had a very sort of innovative entrepreneurial CEO, a gentleman by the name of Koos Becker. And Koos looked around in the rest of the world to see if there were investment opportunities there. And then they invested, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was not an exorbitant amount of money. And they invested it into a company called Tencent in China. And Tencent became one of the world's largest companies.
In China, it's number two because there's one company above it.
Right.
And I was surprised because obviously when you go and read about who is Tencent, then you don't see Naspers as the owner in its Wikipedia. But if you look at who owns Naspers and you go like, Tencent is over there. And it's one of these fascinating trends. Yeah. So could we consider such a company as a unicorn, or is it...
So definitely, I mean, you know, the Tencent, yes, you know, and but I would also, I mean, you've got to give Naspers credit, you know, because they at one point, you know, owned around a third of that business, you know, so which made the value of Naspers, you know, that it went up, you know, many times in value by owning this. You know, could you have foreseen this? I think, you know, if you read up a bit about Naspers, there were a number of unsuccessful investments that they've made as well. Now, you asked about it in the Namibian context. Look, you know, there must be an opportunity somewhere for someone, and I guess, you know, look, on a global scale, of course, let's not forget it's a large country in terms of area, but in terms of population, it's small, you know, so I don't think it's that company would be something that's going to provide a service or goods to the Namibian people
only,
you know. If you think about it, if you think about countries like India with 1.4, they about billion people. You know, think about how many tubes of toothpaste are being consumed every day, or, you know, liters.
Even the toothbrushes.
You know, so think about the simple things. There's buying power there. But, you know, there could be a Namibian company, and maybe it's with through the green hydrogen, who knows, or something else that can become a world player, you know, that I don't think, you know, South Africa, that our neighbor, is always a good place to look at how opportunities existed. If you think about it, companies that came out of South Africa, things like Sasol, which were sort of the first company that made oil from coal, you know,
what do they call it? Synthetic oils.
Synthetic. It's not synthetic, but I mean, it's you know, they literally looked for an alternative to produce oil in order to have fuel when there were sort of trade bans with South Africa during the apartheid times, you know, and they were great innovations, you know, from South Africa that became you know, well known across the world. So I think there's potential. I think the Namibian people are innovative. We should definitely stimulate entrepreneurial thinking in this country. Mm. Whether it's a unicorn in terms of what a unicorn is in global standard, you know, let's hope.
It's a mythical animal.
Let's hope.
Yeah, yeah. We're quickly taking a short break, dear listeners. We'll be coming back right after that. Stay tuned. We're ultimately heading into the last 9 minutes. So we might get into the conclusionary remarks, but if any particular questions or, you know, if you wish to ask something more, and it was sent as a text or ultimately also on our social media, don't worry, dear listeners, we'll have the opportunity of asking it as well in the next episode. Stay tuned. You're on the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray, Namibia. We'll be back right after the break.
There's a song that goes, "Money can't buy me love." And that's true. But then they told us all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Alan Gray, long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized FSP.
Just returning back to listeners from the short ad break right there. Do remember that this is the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Green Namibia. We're heading into our last 7 minutes, so I'll have to impose participation Ramadan, as Helmut always says, meaning that there's a little bit of a restriction, dear listeners. Etienne, if we obviously take a look at our, you know, of our the discussion we've had so far about the egg and basket notion, obviously that we have to think more in the basket sense than in the egg sense. There are a lot of, can we conclude by saying that there are a lot of possibilities through these in terms of, if you know what your savings plan or what your goal is, then these particular two unit trusts can serve the purpose that a person wants to achieve ultimately.
Why, definitely. I mean, you know, I was just thinking back. You know, the thing with unit trusts are you can always look back at what the returns, what the investment returns or performances were. Mm. So, you know, if you think about the Alan Gray Namibia balanced fund,
yeah,
you know, if this fund goes back. We started sort of an iteration thereof in 1999. So that's, as I said, you know, 25 years. Mm. So if you, when we started that, if you invested just $10, 10 Namibia dollars mm. into that fund, it would have grown to $347. Dollars. Mm. So $10 became $347. If you invested $100, that became 3,417. If you invested, $1,000, it would be $34,000 today. Mm. Now, the reason why I'm saying it is that you don't have to come up with some great invention to end up with a lot of money.
Yeah.
If the patience, and I think patience is the one thing that I'm seeing flying out the door more and more these days. It's all about instant gratification. Yeah. I want something and I want it now. But if you have the patience and you understand the concept of compounding, then you can actually save yourself into a position where you become, to call it bluntly, rich.
Mm.
You know, imagine $10 becoming $347. Mm. If you give it enough time, and that was 25 years. You know, most of us will work a career of 40 or more years.
Mm.
So the more you are able to put away, these are unit trusts that delivers these kind of returns. And it's not only Alan Gray, you know, there are some other examples out there as well.
Mm.
I think we are too fixated on making a lot of money in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
For the younger people, of course, and I say to a lot of young people, I wish I could turn back the clock. If I knew what I know now, and I would have saved a lot more, because the reality is, if you put away a lot more money when you were younger, then you need to, then you can afford to put away less as you get older. Unfortunately, if you're someone like me, you kind of wake up here in your late 30s or 40s and realize, oh goodness, I'm not really where I should be. I was just looking at last week I attended an investment conference in Windhoek, and one of my colleagues from South Africa came to present on the matter of retirement and so on. Somebody of my age, that's nearly 45, should have 4 years, four and a half years of their salary already saved up as pension. I'll have to go and look at my pension fund statement to see if I'm there.
I think that number keeps changing, because I was like, wow, yeah. 4.5 years. Because that is a lot.
That is a lot. Yeah. Right. But, and don't despair. I mean, it is, if you don't have that at the age of 40 or 45, then you must just increase the amount that you are putting away every month. So that's the sad reality, of course, is that, if you have to play catch up if you haven't done so early in your life. And then there are some fascinating examples of people that started saving diligently, and ended up in a wonderfully comfortable position, even before retirement. So if you start saving at the age of 20 or 25, you have to save around about the 15% mark of your salary, whereas it's more than half of your salary if you only start saving at 45. So think about it that way. So everybody that's young out there, sure, by all means, go and look for opportunities, be that unicorn. Just by the way, unicorn is a billion US dollar valuation on a company.
I kept out that number for that matter.
But, and that's a billion US dollars. But don't give up, follow your dreams and be that one. But also, whilst you are doing it, don't bet all don't bet it all on becoming that unicorn. Also put away in the meantime, to have that cushion to fall back on if things do not work out.
Exactly. And on that particular note, dear listeners, this does bring us up to the end for this evening's episode of the Business and Economics segment in partnership with Alan Green Namibia. And ultimately, if you were trying to send through a text message or the likes, I'll just collect it. Don't worry, guys. We will have a opportunity next week to answer it. And I'll just obviously in the meantime forward it on to Etienne just to formulate, the direct responses. But on that note, particularly Etienne, if there is a sort of like a last word that you want to share with the listeners just before we end.
Yeah, I think don't lie awake. If you know that you need to invest and you want to invest, but you don't know what to invest in, unit trust is a lovely flexible solution where you can have everything from shares and bonds, in one single portfolio. It is available to Namibian investors, and actually it's a lot more affordable than what you might think.
Exactly. And on that note, dear listeners, thanking you once again, Etienne. Thank you for the time. Let's see each other again, same time, same place next week. Alternatively, you will hear about me next tomorrow morning and during the course of the rest of this week. But stay tuned for the rest of your programming here on your number one talk radio station. And stay tuned for the next program to follow on after the break.
This program was proudly brought to you by Alan Gray, building long-term wealth for our clients since 1973.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low. because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Do you have a question you want answered on air? Have a quick comment you want to share with the presenter? Eagle FM's SMS line is now open. Send your questions and thoughts to 1040. That's 1040 for only $1.50.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.